This will be the first Webcomics Weekly, but well, I'll say it.
No, we're recording, so say it.
Oh, I was just gonna say this is the first Webcomics Weekly where I'm actually doing a Sheldon while we talk.
I'm coloring a strip right now, minus my Wacom tablet, because there are not enough USB ports on this Mac. The laptops need more ports.
That is definitely true.
Yeah, right? What is about
that new Mac Air has like one port on it too. Did you see that?
Yeah, Merlin Mann is a kind of a tech pundit, and I'm on his Twitter feed, and there was a Twitter where he goes, "I think I figured out the purchase audience for the MacBook Air. If you're incredibly rich and you need a fourth computer." It doesn't even have a regular Ethernet port on it.
I know you have to get a jack to a jack, don't you?
No, it's all wireless. That's the only way you can do anything.
Is that really what it is?
Yes. But anyway.
Well, I can sit right next to my Apple TV in uselessness.
Do you have one?
No, God no. I when those came out, I was like, who is this audience? Who needs this?
Oh yeah, I agree, Girk. I kind of want one.
And listen, I would love for it to be useful, but TiVo does the job infinitely better.
Webcomics anyway. Weekly.
Starting off with topics that don't
hey,
relate to
OOA. So Webcomics Weekly. It's me, Scott. It's him, Dave.
It's me.
It's him.
And then there's old Brad.
It's him, Brad. And we're talking comics. Hey, let's update everyone listening on the street date of our book, How to Make Webcomics.
Yeah.
Do that.
It will be the probably the last week of February. It could be a little bit sooner than that, but I don't want to promise anything. But it is all up at Image. And they've got it, and they're telling me since February is a short month that we'll just go ahead and say last week of Feb. So,
oh, that's great.
And then we have some good added news to the printing. I don't know if I talked to you guys about this, but for everybody, and I didn't even know we could do this, for everybody that buys a copy, they get a hug from Brad Geiger.
That is true. I've been flexing my arm muscles for the last couple of weeks, just getting in shape for it, and I think I'm ready for the task.
You're up to it?
Oh, yeah.
Here comes my wife and the inevitable craziness by my dog.
Here we go.
I might be pausing the podcast.
This pre-show.
Hey, baby.
I love that bark. Boom!
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 He's the mascot of Webcomics Weekly. There it is. My wife was sick, got better, and is officially sick again.
Aww. What's great about Kirby's bark when you physically watch him is that his whole body, it like starts at his butt and undulates forward. You know, it's like...
his little front paws come up off the bottom, too, of the ground.
I know, it's adorable
right,
when he barks.
He kind of jumps a little bit when he barks.
Now he's very upset. She went back outside to get something, and he's like, where's my love? But anyway, hug from Geiger. Wow.
And we had to talk to Image about that because apparently there's some FCC rules about it. But we've had Brad tested, and so it turns out we're good to go.
Did everybody see that Brad's little tete-a-tete with the father of his son's friend made it to Fleen?
Yeah, that's it. I got a hysterical call from my wife, who was not prepared to see my face on the web when she went surfing to Fleen, and it was really that was kind of funny.
I thought that was great that made the news, the Webcomics Newswire.
Philadelphia, Dateline. Brad Geiger in a fisticuff with another gent. What will happen? Dateline.
Brad, Dateline, Philadelphia. Brad Geiger brings it.
Dateline, Philadelphia. Brad Geiger with an ass whooping.
His Martian Manhunter is the best, says Brad.
His Martian Manhunter. Dateline, Poland, 10 German troops marching to the Rhineland. Anyway.
What?
That just went nowhere. That went nowhere. Kirby liked it.
No, was the Kirby Rhineland liked. In Poland? Now I'm not sure. I got to Google that.
Rhineland, isn't that German?
Oh, that is.
That is? Yeah, what did they? They never invaded themselves. They're
they
are bastards. I will admit to that because I am of their ilk. I know the gene is in me, but we never invaded ourselves.
Dateline, Rhineland, drunk Germans invade themselves.
We will bow to our own superiority. Was one quote. We.
Who is driving the head of the tank column? Klaus, what are you doing? This is our own town.
We have split our ranks into blonde and more blonde.
Thanks, baby.
All right. So, shall we dip into the old mailbag, gents? Or do we have?
Yes, I think we are through the chaos. I think dog's done barking and.
Oh, you know what? Actually, I do have one bit of news we should mention. For everybody that's in the Northwest, please plan ahead. We got all four of us coming out to Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle.
Oh, yes.
And let me look up the date for that so that you can start planning.
That is going to be so much fun. And that is all. That last year was my first year at Emerald City, and it spoiled me for every other convention I'll ever go to. It is literally one of the best I've ever been to.
Wow!
You
heard it here first, guys.
One of my favorite moments from Emerald City Comic Con: sitting down in the hotel bar, having a beer with Chris and Scott at around 1 a.m. So hungry, and there's a college. A volleyball team that ordered like 14 pizzas. Do you remember this, Scott?
Wait.
And you, Chris, and I were just like, we'll give you $40 for one of those pizzas. Please, one of the pizzas. We were so desperately hungry. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, we were a little. That's right. We were at that. That was the same con that you found that ice cream from the commissary.
What?
You found ice cream from like that. They had that little. And you like completely made love to it.
That ice cream was fantastic. You know, usually hotel food is like, here you go. Here's your Snickers from 1985.
Well, they had these outrageously priced snacks on sale, and they had ice cream. Dave's like, I'm getting some ice cream. I'm sorry. And then he proceeded to just woo it.
Oh, I remember I paid like $8 for like one of those. It's almost like a coffee mug sized ice cream things. It's like a fifth of a pint or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And everybody's like, hey, can I have a bite? And I was like, one of those wolf people like covering his food. Just, well, good. We've started off with my ice cream habits. Let's.
All right. Mailbag.
Oh, I found the date, by the way. Emerald City is May 10th and 11th coming up in Seattle. So plan ahead for that one. That one's going to be a great show. We got a talk on the book at Emerald City Comic Con. So,
oh, that's good.
Join us there. All right. So let's dip into the old mailbags of fun and joy and love. All right. Here we go. This first question is from Patrick Race of akrobotics.com. That's acrobatics.com, but with a K. His question, guys, what are your thoughts on color in a webcomic? You all seem to stick mainly to black and white. Is that just because coloring is time-consuming, or does black and white get you a wider distribution through print?
Wow, that's a great question.
I think it has more to do with time, right?
It does for me.
For me, it does, yeah.
Yeah, although I have to admit that I have kind of become somewhat enamored with the look of black and white art. Like I really do like it. I like the contrast of it sometimes to better than color. I mean, I do like doing color, but I love black and white art. So there's a lot of that in there too.
I do too, but I think audiences in general kind of sway towards color a lot more readily than they do black and white, and I have very little doubt that I could probably improve my readership to a significant degree by starting color, but I just don't have time, and at this point I'm not to the point where I can hire a colorist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm of both camps there. Like I agree with Scott that I have found a certain love for black and white that there's just a feeling that black and white gives you that you can't get in color. But on the flip side, when I do it right, there's nothing I love better than my comic in color. I wish I had the time and the wherewithal to do it every day in color, but I can't keep it up. And it's kind of like coming from our talk last week with time management. You have to know, you have to make it a repeatable process.
Right.
And, if I could do a week of color, or I could do a week of something extraordinary, but it's better to have a repeatable process that you can go to again and again.
I am now having to do this with the new strip I just got hired to do, because the people paying me to do Ding are wanting it in color. And so I'm having to find a process that I can handle that'll look good, but that I can fit into my schedule. So it's been a bit of a challenge.
That's a really good point that you bring up, because I was thinking about that when I was reading your press release about what a great topic that would be for the podcast. Because a lot of people are asking us questions of, you know, how do you start a web comic? You know, how do you kick it off? And we are all people that have done it for quite a while. And here you are starting this new thing. I was wondering what kind of thoughts you had on starting a new strip and something that maybe you could kind of relate to some of the people in the audience.
Hmm. Well, it's been really funny, because I've been looking to kind of inspire myself to come up with a second strip in the sense that it was something I would be doing for fun when I had the chance. And I've just been putting it off because it seems like if I'm going to start something and don't have a regular schedule, it would maybe upset fans more than please them, even if it came out whenever and they got to enjoy it. So when this opportunity came to do this strip and get paid for it and kind of be beholden to a deadline and a client, I thought it probably would be smart for me to turn this down, but I don't want to turn down the money. And this is the opportunity to get this second strip out and stay on a mm-hmm. schedule, because now I have to, you know. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of come full circle, because that's how PvP started. It was a lot of sitting around on my own, not ever doing anything, and then someone offered me some money to do a strip on their website, and at the same time maintain ownership of it completely, and it forced me to stay on this schedule. So I'm very excited. 10 years later, kind of coming full circle. And so I'm approaching it a little bit differently than I think I might have approached it earlier if I had been doing it just for myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because now I kind of have a client to please as well.
Right.
So I actually been going off of...
How do you think you would have approached it if you were doing it just for yourself? It would have been more of a leisurely pace, you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the bottom line is I have to keep PvP going. And so, you know, it's just like anything. It's like losing weight or sticking to an exercise schedule or anything that you know you should do because it's good for you or right, but it's difficult to find the motivation to do. And when you have a lot of work and you've got a busy year ahead of you, starting a second strip probably isn't the smartest idea. But the way I'm looking at this, so here's how I'm approaching this. I'm looking at it as a year project, okay, with my end goal being a book at the end of the year. So I had to decide on content and format and all that kind of stuff. Now, this is a right. website for video games. And like I said, full circle. And they were excited about the idea of me doing what I had done in my strip a couple weeks back, where I had had my characters playing World of Warcraft and commenting on these massively multiplayer games, which are very popular right now. So do something like that for them. Unlike PvP, this is a return to full-blown video games. You know, this is, don't worry whether or not someone can get it if they don't play the game. This is all about, you know, targeting that specific niche, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when I sat down to format the strip, I decided it would be 4 panels every week that were independent of each other, so I could stack them 2 and 2, because what I'd like to do is 1 strip per page. And if I do 2 strips a week, that's 8 strips a month. And at the end of the year, I'll have 96 strips. So that's 96 pages of a trade paperback I'll have at the end of the year.
Well, no,
so
actually,
literally, as
year.
you were, designing this comic strip, you were thinking about what it was going to look like when you put the book out.
Yes, this is I've been approaching it as I am putting together a book that's going to take me a year to finish because that's the only schedule I can really pace myself at. Now, if I'm smart and I want to be, I'm going to be working ahead so that this can go on sale in November for Christmas sales. So, you know, and then that'll be an incentive to buy it because you can see the strips that are coming up, you know, before they get out.
Right.
Right.
So I'm trying to also look at it from a business point of view. And I guess I get to look at it a little bit differently than others because I have an established audience and stuff. But
there's a couple of really key business decisions in there that are worth emphasizing. I mean, one, you're already creating for a book. Two, you've already got in mind what your sales schedule is, which is Christmas, which is the biggest time of year for people to buy books. So right off the bat, you've already made two huge decisions that a lot of beginners might not even consider.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really key.
Well, and I think also it helps to have an exit strategy. Like, especially when you're starting a second project or a project that is going to take up a lot of your time and you might find yourself not motivated to finish it, is if you have an end product in mind, an end goal, which is I'm going to work for a set number of time and at the end of it I'll have something physical that I can sell. You know, now you're working towards a goal. You can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not this indefinite, God, why am I bothering? Why am I going to keep doing this? Why do I want to draw this week? I'm tired of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, you have a prize to keep your eye on, and that is the book at the end of the year. So,
man, that is some great advice.
So talk to me about this. When you were developing the characters, now I realize these were characters that are holdovers maybe from an earlier project. Am I getting that right?
Well, back in the day, I did a strip for a company called GameSpy called Ding, which was at the time very much about the game EverQuest, which was very popular. It's kind of the Warcraft of the time. So in the sense that I did a strip about massively multiplayer games in the past, they're pre-existing characters, but they're actually new characters. I drew them, some of them more recently in PvP as the game avatars of the PvP group. But I also decided that I wanted this new property to be separate. Ding. Ding, by the way, the title of this strip, Ding, is the noise that you hear when you go up a level. Ding. It's usually a chime or a bell. So that's where the term ding comes from. Whenever anyone levels in these games, they always say ding, and then everyone goes, congrats. Because you just went up a level. So,
what kind of thoughts were going through your head when you were thinking about these characters for this new project?
Well, the first thing is they need to be separate of any game in particular. So if you play EverQuest, if you play Dungeons & Dragons at your table, if you play World of Warcraft, and these are all very typical Lord of the Rings type thing, I'm giving it more of a Warcraft flair and feel because that's what's very popular right now. But I want this to be an entity that exists separate of any one game so it can be something of mine that I can own.
So do you have parallels of gaming that would be seen in World of Warcraft, but you have different terminology for it?
I think I'm going to do that. I think I'm going to try to avoid maybe specific World of Warcraft terminology just as a creative decision.
I think that's smart. And are you going to give the game a name that they're playing? Are you going that?
No. As a matter of fact, I don't think I ever want to address they're in a game except for game-like things happen. Like, they're going to be discussing how armor has statistics or... For example, one of the first strips I'm working on right now is the character Kissy Bear is yelling at someone who keeps asking him once again to collect boar tusks so he can build a trebuchet to fight back invaders. And the response is, look, I gave you 60 tusks. You know, you've been asking for these tusks for 2 years. I'm tired of this. You're never going to build the trebuchet. You know, I'm sick of hearing it every time I come to town. And he's screaming at him, and then the guy's friend says, hey, go easy on him. He's just a quest giver. And then he's like, I've had it up to here with the boar tusks, dude. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's making a joke on the fact that when you play through a game, a quest giver gives you a quest, but as soon as you're done, the next guy's getting the same quest. So it's being self-aware and kind of meta about the fact that they're in a game. But
right.
But the coloring choice, since I do have to color it, I'm stealing Paul Southworth's kind of style, that flat color.
Mm-hmm.
Because it saves a lot of time. With PvP and with the teaser image I did, I put in a lot of shading, but that takes so much time.
Yeah.
You know what's actually worth talking about for 1 second, because I think it's actually a brilliant stylistic choice, is Paul Southworth of UglyHill.com does a daily color for Ugly Hill. But one thing that he does, and I don't know that we've talked about this before, but Paul will go in and replace his black lines with a very dark brown. I don't know if you guys have seen this.
Mm-hmm.
If you go over to UglyHill.com, you'll know what I mean. But it has such an interesting stylistic change to change your black to another color. I mean, I've seen some people do it with a dark, dark blue or purple. I think most of the time Paul does it with a dark brown. But this one that I'm looking at doesn't look like a dark brown. Anyway, it makes such a unique thing that you may not notice, but you may notice subconsciously. And that's an interesting color choice.
That's one of the tricks I'm using. There's a couple things I want to do to make this feel like it's colored with having, you know, putting time into it, but without actually putting time into it. So, because the flat color never looks good as when you go in and shade it or model it. So one of the tricks I'm using is that taking your line art and altering the color of it so it's not solid black. Because it softens the characters a bit. Another trick I'm doing is I'm putting a separate layer on top of my colors and filling it, the whole thing, with the solid color. Like, for example, right now they're in the desert. So after my coloring's done, I'm making a new layer, filling it completely with an orange, and setting the property of that layer to color. And so what it does is it turns all of your hues, all your purples, blues, reds, greens, into the same hue variation of orange.
Wow.
Then you take the opacity of that layer and bring it down to about 11%. So it just gives everything a tint. So now it looks like orange light is hitting all of your purples and reds and blues and colors.
That's nice.
And it's a real quick trick to add a little snap of modeling and shading to your strip, to your flat colors.
So does it end up almost as though, if this were a printout, someone's taken like a sepia transparency and placed it over it? Is that the look that you're?
Yes, but a very light hint, because the colors are coming through. Like the characters I'm designing now have palettes of, one character's all very purple and green, the other one's brownish and orange, but they all have kind of an orange tint to them. And you can do it with any color. When I had them in the forest and it's nighttime, I can put a bluish tint over everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to come up with these little tricks that will help me keep it looking sharp and look like I've put a ton of time into it, but still lets me stay on a decent production schedule.
Nice.
And another thing I've done to differentiate it, and that'll be my last part about this shop talk. I'm sure this is boring. I'm using a different font from PvP. I've chosen a font from comic book fonts, Starking's Comicraft. They had a big sale on the first of the year, and I picked up the Astro City font. It's still comic booky, but it's different from what I'm using in PvP, and I'm hoping that'll help differentiate it a bit from the PvP strip.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, here's a quick tip about lettering. I didn't realize this, but some fonts, especially these comic book fonts you get from Blambot or comic book fonts, to do a capital I with the bars at the top, if you hold down shift in the right bracket, it actually makes an I with bars, where the normal capital I is just a line.
Oh.
So if you have an I all by itself, you want the bars. But if you have the I in a word, you just want you want it without the top bars, top and bottom bars.
Right.
All right. Well.
That's a good tip.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I did not know that one.
Yeah.
One last question. I know you're trying to get away from this topic, but in terms of writing the characters, is there anything you're going to do there in starting this new strip? In other words, you've got your characters, their personalities. What are your thoughts there?
I'm doing a lot in it to differentiate it from PvP. I know a lot of people are going to imagine that these are the PvP characters playing these guys, but I'm trying to come up with all new characters. And I'm very lucky that I play World of Warcraft. So I get a ton of inspiration from, you know, I have like 500 people that are PvP fans that all play in our guild. And and so, you know, I have all their personalities to kind of to go off of. And and that's pretty fun.
But you're not doing this on a demographic basis where you say, no, this guy's got to be a certain type and this guy's got to be another certain type. You're just doing it based on what personalities you think would be funny to write.
Yeah. I mean, I am borrowing a little bit from – I'm sorry about that noise in the background, guys. This is what happens when I do a podcast from my house and not the office. You get automatic cat boxes going off in the background and dogs and wives.
I actually didn't even hear it.
No, I didn't hear it either.
I'm trying to follow some archetypes that you might meet when you play online and you meet different types of people. You know, the girls that all always want to role play and the kids that won't pick a you know, they're picking stupid names and they're talking, you know, like kids and but again, I'm trying to make this to where even though clearly they're playing a game, it's still a world contained in itself with characters that you want to get to know and care about and like, so.
Mm-hmm.
And that ultimately you're flawed. You know, I can't escape that. The whole strip is about the worst guild on the server. You know, there's only five of them. They can't even, you know. So I don't make them the most badass guild on the server. They're the worst. You know?
And has it entered your character creation process the thought that you'll only get to write for these people twice a week?
Yes. Yeah. I don't think there's going to be any long story arcs. This will all be one-off gags, or maybe.
And the character development just by nature can't be a thief, right? I mean, obviously.
I don't know. You know, I'm sure there's people out there who do strips 3 days a week and get continuity in there, but I'm only doing this 2 days a week, and I just don't see how I could get, like, I think it would be kind of difficult to read ongoing storylines at coming out at you at 2 days a week. So.
No, yeah, that would be my gut reaction to the thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're right there. Well, congratulations.
I'm really looking
version.
Forward to reading this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading it myself. It's one of those things where, you know, I always say when you want to write something interesting, you write yourself in a corner and then try to work your way out of it. And it's one of those things where, you know, you just kind of jump in the pool and either sink or swim. And I've really thrown myself in the pool here because I want it to be good and I want it to be sharp looking and different from PvP as well. And that's a tall order.
Yeah.
But it's only 2 days a week. I can do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially when there's a paycheck involved.
Yeah. That really helps. And that's another thing, you know. I mean, I want everyone to know that's listening to this, is that's not something I just say casually. I mean, it is a big deal. And it took, keep in mind, it's been 10 years in between the first time and the second time someone has asked me to be paid to make cartoons. That's a long time. So yeah. It is a big deal that I got to do this. And it's a better deal than I think most people would get. I think because I have PvP and it's established, I got to say things like, okay, but I own it. And then they're like, all right, but we own it. We're exclusively online. No. You can have it online and anything I make for you can stay on your site, but I still get to put it online elsewhere when our contract's over. Okay. You know, because you're the guy that does PvP. So I'm not – that's another thing is I don't want to miss any deadlines with this because I don't want to crap on how lucky I am to have gotten, you know, this opportunity. So.
Yeah. Now, that's important to remember too.
Yeah. It's rare that these opportunities come along. So let's hope it lasts. Let's hope the site does well and they can continue to pay me and the strip can continue to go.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah.
Davey, we got something in the mailbag?
Well, actually, you know what? A thought just occurred to me, and I hope you guys don't mind this. I have an unexpected question to ask both of you, and it's actually an interesting topic. Comic signatures, artist signatures. What are your guys' thoughts on that? Because I just noticed that Scott, and I don't know that I've ever noticed this before, you don't sign your comic.
I don't.
And Brad, I've noticed for many a year, you have a very stylized signature. Mm-hmm. And mine is sort of a simplified K and a square. And I was wondering what your guys' thoughts were. Because I think that might be an interesting topic for a minute.
Oh, yeah. Well, I will lead off if you'd like.
Please.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've been talking too much.
Here's my thoughts. I think the comic signature is as close as we cartoonists get to coming out to after the curtain drops and taking a bow. And I think it's that and it's a logo. In other words, I want my signature to be instantly recognizable so that if people are paying attention, they know that I did this thing. And so I want that to be my curtain call, and I want it to be my logo. So what I did was I came up with a way of signing my name that I thought was nice and indicative of my style, scanned it in once at a high resolution, and then I literally pull that in as a TIFF file to every illustration I work on, and it's the exact same thing every time that I bring it in, and it serves as my logo. I
really?
Think it's important. Yeah, I think it's important to have.
That no, but I never would have guessed that essentially a sprite for you. I genuinely thought you'd hand drew it every time.
That's no, I bring that in as a scan, and it's as of February, it'll be an 8-year-old scan.
Wow.
Because I honestly thought, because I thought this to myself, this was maybe 5 years ago that I thought this. I changed the way that I signed my strips, and I was looking at the way you did it, and this is the honest to God truth, Brad. I said, how does Brad do this every time? That is like an extra 10 minutes of work on a signature. And now I know that you cheat. And that
oh, wait a minute, cheat? My God, Brad, why don't you just have a sprite comic?
I know. Listen to me, jeez, Brad. You might as well put down the pen. No, I'll be honest. I was so impressed with that. I was like, wow, he takes a good what the love of the craftsmanship of that signature. Look at that. And now I know what to do.
No. The craftsmanship happened once in 2000, maybe March of 2000, and after that, there's no craftsmanship other than importing a TIFF.
Well, the most interesting thing I thought I heard you say before we go on to Scott's thoughts about it is that, and because I've never heard this expressed, is that you think of it as a curtain call or a bow, and that's I would like you to expand on that because I've never heard an artist say it that way.
Well, it's kind of hard to put into words, but it's kind of like it's a personal extension of me, and what I kind of imagine things happening is that. That after they read it, their eyes drift over towards that signature, and there's my name. And maybe in some small way, they said, oh, yeah, Geiger did this. And then that's kind of me coming out and taking a bow. It's a weird thing, and I may be the only person that thinks of it this way, and maybe nobody has ever had that experience of reading the strip and maybe, you know, getting a good feeling from it and then glancing over the signature. But that's kind of how I envision it, is that, you know, in some way they look at that and they say, oh, yeah, that's Geiger, you know, and maybe they take away something good from that.
I find that an interesting thought because I've never thought of it that way. So I wanted to hear your thoughts about that. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So, Scott, now let's talk about you. So you don't – have you ever signed your strips or was this a recent thing? Or
I used to when I was a kid. I used to when I used to make my own comics. And I remember the day I stopped signing my – there's two reasons. I've never come to a signature that I like. I always hate it. And because I can't have anything consistent, I just never do it. The second thing is that when I was a kid, I used to make strips and show them to my parents, and I did a Sunday strip, and I made my own logo panel, which, you know, at the time I had no idea was something that is optional for the papers to run.
Right.
And I wrote, you know, whatever it was, Zach the Dragon, and then I wrote out, like, real nice as a part of the logo by Scott Kurtz, and then I signed it. My dad said, you don't need to sign it. Your name's at the front. And I said, yeah, but that's how they do it. And he's like, look, it looks like you're bragging. And I think that stuck with me.
Really?
Yes, it has. And so it's like I have my strip and I have at the bottom of every strip copyright 2000 whatever Scott R. Kurtz. So in case the strip ever ends up not on my site, but it's on my site, my name's on it. It just feels like if I sign it, I'm bragging. Like, I drew this. Everybody see that I drew it? Get it? It was me. I did this. Did you like it? Mm-hmm. It was me. And, you know, Image is giving me a hard time sometimes because they're like, you should sign this. You never sign your covers. And I said, mm-hmm. Yeah, but everybody knows I draw PvP. Who else would have drawn it? So I just have never been able to bring myself to sign it.
Well, you very often have guest covers, so that's actually a good point on Image's part.
Yeah, I guess so. But the guests will sign their covers. And you know what? I also really hated why do Brett and I always seem at odds? I think it's stupid to sign your name. Shame on you, Brad.
Can I tell you what I find so interesting as a personality difference is that Brad's like, I consider it my bow, my curtain call, my gift to the audience, and you're like, I hate it. It's bragging to me. Like, I think that's interesting from a personality perspective, the way you two guys view it.
Brad and I are going to one day go to fisticuffs about comedy approaches, you know? And it's like Brad'll always be, why did you ruin that joke by adding another piece of dialogue after the punchline? And then I'll be like, hey, Brad, why don't you just add 2 feet flying up off panel, you know, to telegraph your punchline more? Why don't you add a panel with actual curtains closing and then we'll fight?
No, in a respect, you're right, Scott, because I really do think that you should sign your work. I do not think that it's bragging to sign your work. And if there is an amount of pride that is involved with signing your work, I think it is well-earned pride.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Take that.
I actually would side with Brad on that one. I think that both from a reader perspective and from an artist perspective. Although, you know what? There have been classical painters that never signed the front of their paintings. They would sign the back of their paintings because they thought it was ostentatious to sign the painting itself.
Right.
But I think there's an intrinsic value for the artist. It's mark making, and you say, here is my mark. It's like it's interesting that every culture that traditionally came up with art, like even the Imperial Chinese stamp system of ownership on art, you know, that every culture came up with it independently, that the person that made this creation would sign it.
Well,
I don't know. I think there's value in an artist.
I also acknowledge that it's irrational. Like it has to do with a little boy being told something by his dad and taking it to heart and never letting go of that. I understand that, but you know, also a big part of it is, Brad, I'm not saying this is you because it's not, and neither is your signature, Dave, and Chris's signature is actually just his name in his font, and I actually really like that. But reading comics in the '90s and even now, people go way overboard with their signature, making it something that is they've gotten huge and complex, and they're like, I have a friend named Brian Denham, and at one point his signature was a jean pocket that said Denham on it, you know, because his last name is D-E-N-H-A-M, but it sounds like denim, like denim jeans, and because that was the style, you went out of your way to say, I drew this, bam, here's my signature, and it's like a second piece of art inside of it. And that really turned me off. And so I experimented a lot trying to come up with a signature that was very simple, and I just never could decide on anything. And I just finally came to the conclusion that my signature is that I have no signature.
Huh. Well, yeah, no, I can see value in that. You know what, though? Now I would caution you
a little bit.
You
can't.
What's that?
You don't see value in it. Don't you have to?
No, listen. I can see. I said it before that from a lot of painters' perspective, there's you said yourself that with guest covers, the signature is what demarks it as not being you.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the guy that used to draw Dennis the Menace. The way you would know it was a guest artist, not him drawing it, is that he always notched the corner of one of the Dennis the Menaces. And that's how you would know. And so you saying that me not signing it is how you know it's a PvP actually has value, because for people that want to know they'll learn that a non-signed PVP is a genuine PVP.
Well, I just want to tell everyone listening out there, kids making your first comics, sign your work. Brad and Dave are right. Don't be a neurotic mess with daddy issues like me.
Well, I was actually gonna caution you a bit, because now that you're selling original art, here's the lesson that I learned a long time ago, is that so. I do, 365 strips a year, and out of those, and Brad probably can relate to this, there's probably 10 or 20 a year where I forget to sign it. And maybe, Brad, maybe you don't have that problem because you use the file, but and it's part of your process. But every once in a while, I will physically forget to put it in there, and then it goes in the archives. But, you know, over the course of the year, I sell a couple hundred originals, and like last year, this bummed me out so much, is that I sent one off to Germany. This woman actually bought two. And in those two comics, one of them I had forgotten to sign, and she got it, and she's like, you didn't sign this. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, thinking that was the end of it. She's like, I'm going to send it back to you. And so then I had to reship it out. And, you know, when you ship an original, it's all this super stiff board and expensive envelopes and all this sort of stuff. And I had to reship it to Germany because I had forgotten to sign one. So you might find now that you're selling originals that there's actually greater value with the signature.
Yeah, I had to actually sit down with them, and because I had almost mailed one off, I had to rip open the packaging, and I said, you know what, I'm going to sign all of these now so I don't forget.
Yeah, because it's such a pain when it happens.
Hey, you know what else I have to do to all my original art? Erase every chicken scratch note and phone number. I mean, my original art is covered in people's phone numbers.
I could understand erasing phone numbers, but I think half of the joy of getting original art is seeing some of this chicken scratching.
Yeah, I actually had someone tell me that the way they framed it, I don't know if you've ever seen this museum framing where they double frame it so that in a museum you can see it from both sides. Because on the back of one of my strips, I was on the phone or something, and I doodled this whole landscape where Arthur was flying into a pond and Flocka was floating on a little like pool floaty. And it was actually a pretty cute little image. And so the woman that bought the original said, oh my God, there was a whole surprise on the back. And I double framed it, and she showed me a picture of it. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. She's got it like on a pedestal rather than on a wall.
Oh, wow.
So there is value in the extra marks of your originals. But yeah, you definitely want to erase the phone numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can respect Scott's viewpoint just because it comes from his dad, and I know Scott has a really strong relationship with his dad, and I would never do anything to poo-poo that. But don't tell him that.
Like,
don't tell who that.
Don't tell my dad that. He's been giving me a hard time lately about the hero worship.
Does your dad listen to this podcast?
I doubt it. I don't know. Oh, okay. He might.
All right. I almost got a little bit like stage fright there, thinking that Mr. Kurtz was listening.
No,
but seriously, I think that signing your work is important, and I think that you should take a little pride in that original art, yeah. and sign your name on it without a cringe.
I just need to come up with a good signature.
Question, Scott. Here's a fun question, Scott. If you were to sign it, what would it look like? What would you do it?
Oh, I do. I sign my books and stuff. It's just a chicken scratch Kurtz. In fact, I ego surfed the other day and found a very upset person that was at the con this weekend, who was really upset with me because he asked me to sign his book, and he's like, he signed it, and I opened it up, and it just said Kurtz. And it's like not even thanks for buying the book or a little note, just Kurtz. And I could barely read it. And I thought, oh, wow. Do people put little notes in too? Like, do you guys always put in a note?
Yes.
Really?
I usually put in something. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know what? I've got –
What's wrong with me? I shouldn't say this out loud.
I shouldn't say this out loud, but I've got like three or four stock phrases that I use. That I just something to make it's a little bit more fun than just reading my name. If I'm writing a Evil Incorporated book, if I'm writing one out for that, it'll be like "Stay Evil" or "Thanks for your support of Evil" or something like that. Just something that's kind of fits into the theme and everything. And it's just like a little something that I write that makes it more than just my signature. I don't want to say personal because. It's obviously not personal. I write "Stay Evil" about, you know, a couple dozen, two, three times at any convention. So it's not personal that I was just looking at that one person and saying, I think that one person should really try to stay evil.
And but what's weird, Brad, is the Christmas card that I got from you that said, hey, Dave, stay evil. And I was like, Brad, don't give me this.
Yeah. Yeah, cause especially since I had, you know, crossed out the baby Jesus on the card and everything. You know,
the baby Jesus.
A bit far.
You cross out the baby Jesus, and then below it you write a note, dead to you.
Oh, God. Especially at cons. Why always? You guys don't. Well, never mind. That's a whole other topic.
You're going to go into sketches.
Yeah, I was going to go into sketches.
Go ahead.
We covered that. Oh no. I was going to say I always try to give it a quick sketch. We have differing philosophies on that, and I think we talk about that in the book, don't we? About the differing philosophies.
Yeah. That's a little sidebar that we all kind of chime in on.
What is? Oh, whether you automatically doodle?
Whether you should do a sketch in the book or not.
Well, whether you're even willing to do a sketch.
If I have time, I'll do a quick headshot thing, but I could charge for that.
See, that Scott, you and I are in agreement finally.
Hey, listen, weekend I bought a sketch. Well, I actually didn't, but this weekend Bob Layton was at the con. And it's Chris's favorite artist of all time. And I said to him, how much are your – because he's a guy that drew Iron Man back in the day. I said, how much for a picture of Iron Man? He goes, $100 because I have to work for a living. Those were his exact words to me.
Uh-huh.
So
– yeah, that's a good enough reason as any. I mean, the discussion Brad and I have had about it at cons is that Brad's like, no, this is my living. I'm going to charge for it, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I always say, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. But my thought is the goodwill that you generate – from giving out a free sketch to current, future, and long-time readers overweighs the $10 you get for whatever book sketch. So that's just a philosophical difference.
And you're right about that. So, to the extent that I've kind of come to a step or two towards you in that I have developed five or six little sketches that I can do in 30 seconds or you know, a minute or less, let's put it that way. 30 seconds sounds kind of harsh, but these are sketches that I can kind of pull out real quick. They look good, and you know, and I can kind of crank them out. And those are the sketches that I am more than happy to do in a book or something like that. But for me to sit down and do the kind of detailed, very, very involved sketches that I see you doing – for a book, I can't, unless it's a really slow convention or there's nothing else going on, I just can't do that.
But to be fair, though, Brad, to me, how long do I spend on those super detailed sketches?
You are I will grant you that. That might be part of it, too. I'm a slow drawer, and you do those very, very quick. That's a really good point you raised there. For me to do the kind of sketch that you do inside of a book would take me at least 20 minutes to a half an hour. And
yeah.
You can really whiz through those. I am impressed.
Guys, I hate to interrupt. I just got a phone call from Mike Herholic over at Penny Arcade. He's on the phone with me now because he's listening to our podcast, not this one, but a previous one, and he had something to tell me. What is it, Mike?
Okay, go ahead.
Hold on. I'll put you on speaker.
He's not BSing.
Now, don't curse.
Okay.
Can you guys hear him?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Mike.
Hi. I was listening to the podcast on the way home, and I don't know who it is. I'm not sure which one of you guys it is. One of you guys laughs like the Joker. What's going on?
That is most definitely Brad.
Yeah. He's laughing right now, Mike. That is Brad Geiger of Evil Inc.
Brad? All right. Well, tell him to stop. Because I really can't enjoy the podcast with that happening everywhere.
Oh! Careful with the cursing. I'm going to have to edit that out.
You have to believe it. I can't enjoy it. It's too much. It sounds like a laugh track. It sounds like I'm watching the Brady Bunch and, you know, Greg just dropped the football or he's in large space and then the laugh track kicks in and it's horrible. So, make him stop. And otherwise, big fan. Talk to you guys later.
All right, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Okay,
all right, bye. There you go.
You know what? You know what's great about a call like that is that it's like, "Hey guys, love the podcast. You got to ditch Rob. You just got to get rid of him." That's the equivalent of, "Hey, I love everything. Who is that laughing? Oh god."
Podcast is great, except for Geiger.
Except for Geiger.
Oh my god. I got two words for you: wreck and train, and not in that order.
There goes those alarm clocks right out the window.
Well, congratulations.
To be fair to Brad on that front is that I think 80% of our fan mail is people just going, "I wish I had Brad as a ringtone," or "I want Brad as an alarm clock." I swear to God, 80% of our email is people going, "Brad's laugh. What is it? Demonic? Is it heaven? I can't tell."
It is a recurring question I get is like even my friend Gary, who's traveling the world, is like, "I'm listening to your podcast," and I go, "Oh, do you like it?" He goes, "Yeah. Who's the guy that laughs all the time?"
And you know, can I've tell you? Got complaints from my wife, and I swear to God, this is true. I do the podcast from my studio, which is on the second floor of our row house, and you know, most of the living goes on
what
on the, first,
the top of your row house
on the second floor from our row house.
What is a row house?
Row house. You would. I'm sorry. In Texas, you'd call it like it's a townhouse, but you know they're a little bit bigger.
Oh, okay. I thought you had like a second. Second home.
No, it's just like but it's all attached housing, which means right now my neighbors probably hate me.
Nah.
But everything, all the living goes on the first floor, and a lot of times you guys might not hear it. But when I start laughing, I'll pound my fist on the desk or I'll stamp my foot on the floor and dust. All of a sudden, particles start falling from the ceiling downstairs. And my wife has to come up and open up the door and you know, kind of give me this hand signal that involves just one finger that says, you know, calm it down a little bit.
I still remember, and Scott, you weren't there, but when we were at SPX last spring, Chris, Brad, and I went to have a drink. Do you remember this, Brad? We went to go grab a beer.
Yeah.
And we sat down with that guy from Diamond, I think. Was that where he's from? Or Image? Where was he from?
I'm blanking out.
Was it the colorist on – it was just
colorist from –
Steve Hammaker.
Steve Hammaker. Yeah. And at one point, it was my round to buy, and I was up at the bar with Steve, and he leans over and he goes, "Is that guy's laugh real?" I've never heard of that story.
That's awful. Brad, we love your laugh.
You know, I grew up being incredibly embarrassed by my dad's laugh. Because if you guys think I'm something, you ought to hear my dad sometime. I mean, he really has a distinctive laugh that I was just absolutely embarrassed by. That over time, obviously, you know, when you get to be older, you realize how cool your parents actually are, that I really started to really kind of appreciate. But here I am, and I'm hearing all this stuff, and I'm like, you know, my kids are probably looking at me saying, "Oh, my God, the old man's laughing again. What am I going to do with this guy?"
Well, you know, it's really funny because Chris and I were doing – we started up the affirmations again recently, and I thought to myself, maybe I'll do a podcast daily on my own where I just sit here and just, you know – for 15 minutes, just talk about what I'm thinking about. And I've tried recording a couple and I just can't bring myself to do it. And as I'm recording, I'm like, I need Brad laughing at all my stuff. That's what I need. I need Brad laughing at my stuff.
Well, what time do you record? Hey, I'm cheap.
Yeah. Well,
I will say this to Mike. It is not a laugh track. It is genuine. These guys honestly do crack me up. And if there's any proving to do that, let's face it, with a laugh as asinine as mine, you couldn't be making this stuff up. I just lost you guys.
We both go quiet.
On purpose. Well, listen, it's been 51 minutes or 53 now, and I know that Brad has to go downstairs and apologize.
I got a hot take. So
let's wrap it up. Let's wrap it up.
As always, it has always been a pleasure.
David, real quick, David, you said you had a protest.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and also I like how you called me David. Do you normally call me David?
No, but only when I need to get your attention.
I call you David. I don't know why.
That's
Is that okay?
That's true. You could, you know what? As long as you call me.
Yikes.
That old vaudevillian joke. Never mind. Didn't work. So, yeah, my pro tip. Bam. So this last year, I have been subscribing to various entrepreneurial magazines because if you don't know it yet, as a cartoonist working on the web, you are an entrepreneur. And so my pro tip for this week was the subscription that you want to get. So I've tried Inc., I've tried Fast Company, I've tried Business Week, I've tried what else did I get? Forbes, Fortune, and Entrepreneur this year, and reading through all of them, and they're all good reads. But the one that I have found, yeah.
The other one you got was Hot Tail, I believe.
Yes, thank you, Brad. That's good.
Jeez.
Thank you for the insertion there.
Yikes.
No, and so anyway, so Fast Company, Inc., and Entrepreneur, all the most appropriate for cartoonists, but my pro tip for this week is you want to get yourself a subscription to Entrepreneur Magazine. They repurpose a lot of material. It's not always the super winner issue, but let's say 10 out of the 12 issues of the year, if you're not finding something useful that you can immediately apply and immediately gain a couple thousand dollars in income from Entrepreneur Magazine, then you're doing something wrong. So my pro tip this week is a subscription to Entrepreneur Magazine. You want to check that out.
What's in that Entrepreneur Magazine?
In fact, I almost got you guys all that for Christmas, but I was going to get you all – this shows how cheap I am. I was going to get you all subscriptions to Entrepreneur, and I forgot to do it.
Small Businessman Monthly.
Yeah, exactly. Entrepreneur is a lot of it is profiles, which is less helpful. But I actually find that the most helpful tidbits in there are actually – I don't even know what you would call them from a magazine standpoint. They're the little blurbs that are a paragraph to two paragraphs long. Do you know, Brad? What's that called in journalism?
Like a sidebar?
I guess it's like a sidebar. Yeah, that's probably – well, anyway – The early pages and the sidebars throughout the magazine I actually find the most helpful. And a lot of them are either money-saving tips on shipping or on setting up your small business, all this sort of stuff. And actually, if you want to save yourself some money, Entrepreneur.com, which is their web association, kind of reprints, for lack of a better phrase, reprints all the stories and blurbs in the magazine about 2 months later. So you can check it out there. And there's a lot of really helpful stuff for small businesses. So that's my pro tip. Bam.
Good one.
Awesome.
Good one. And we should make it a point, since we are talking about the first of the year next week, let's talk a little bit about taxes.
All right, let's
do
it.
That's a good idea.
I'll get my accountant on. He can talk about how he handles
it. I'm going to get my tax on.
Get my tax on. All right,
Jim. All right, this has been Webcomics Weekly. I'm Scott.
All right.
He's David.
And I'm the insane laugh.
And also the Joker. Cesar Romero, everyone.
Brad, if you were a superhero, what would your name – would it be the Living Laugh or – what was that X-Men, the Sonic Scream would tear through
Banshee.
Things, the Scottish guy?
I mean, I don't know. Wow. I nerded it up. His sister was named Siren.
That's right. Yes. Oh, yes. My God. Way to make the call on that. I haven't read X-Men in years. Good call. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am a nerd. And scene.